This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 105.
And I think CHROs should expect and request the all-access pass, which is I need to be able to have any discussion with you, need to be able to bring any observation, and I need to be involved in those things that I believe are vital for me to be involved in so that I can have the organization HR function support this organization's success. This takes some time. As I said, sometimes CEOs and leadership teams are not raised to think of the CHRO in that context, and or sometimes it's just not the first instinct. Why would the people person be in this meeting? But if you have in the interview process and in the onboarding process and in an ongoing basis, those conversations with your CEO about this is why I need to be part of that decision. And over time, when you start to bring that all access pass request and you start to bring the observations, even the ones that are uncomfortable, and you work through that together, it becomes a really beautiful place where it's one of the most powerful unlocks for an organization when the CEO and the CHRO are working in that kind of trust, candor, all access pass discussion type basis.
How do you establish and build key stakeholder relationships based on mutual trust and healthy candor? And what does successfully onboarding to a new CHRO or HR leadership role look like? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. Hey everyone, we are about 1 month away from Elevate by Future of HR. Elevate by Future of HR is an exclusive 3-week virtual program specifically designed for next-gen HR leaders. And my goal with Elevate by Future of HR is to reimagine professional development for next-gen HR leaders like yourself. We all know that we can do more to invest in ourselves as professionals and invest in our HR teams, and this is an opportunity to do just that. Elevate is a flexible and targeted 3-week program featuring 18 interactive sessions, live Q&As for personalized guidance from 22 of the best minds in our field. In addition, you'll have on-demand access to all the recordings for all the sessions through March 31st, 2025. This is an incredible opportunity to accelerate your growth, elevate your career, and amplify your impact with actionable insights and strategies from 22 top thought leaders. So who will you be learning from at Elevate? Well, here's just a few examples. Michael Watkins will share the 6 disciplines of strategic thinking. Charlene Lee will share how AI will transform HR. Kevin Cox will talk about what defines the world-class CHRO. Humaira Malik Shahid will talk about embedding DEI into talent practices. And Mark Alfaron will tell you there are just 3 very difficult things that are the key to career success. And we also have another 17 amazing speakers at Elevate. You don't want to miss this incredible development experience. So go to Elevate by Future of HR 2024. That's Elevate by Future of HR 2024.com, and reserve your spot. And for those of you looking to make a big impact on your team's development, we also have group discounts and affordable enterprise licenses available, which will give your entire HR team the opportunity to experience Elevate. But don't wait too long to reserve your spot. Prices increase on Friday, September 13th. And with that, I want to introduce this week's guest, Jordana Cameron, who is the SVP and CHRO for Corning. In this role, Jordana is responsible for setting the strategic direction for Corning's people and culture investments to continue the company's longstanding position as a premier employer globally. Prior to joining Corning, Jordana served as the CHRO for Claire's and Cormark. And early in her career, she also held human resource leadership positions with SC Johnson, American Express, and Daimler Chrysler. I really enjoyed my conversation with Jordana. She's an authentic, business-focused leader who's not only down to earth, but she is super smart. And I'm pretty sure after this episode that all CHROs and HR leaders will be asking their CEOs and their business leaders for what she calls an all access pass. We also talked about why she recommends taking risks and pursuing opportunities that stretch you in your early career. Her advice for CHROs and HR leaders on how to successfully onboard into a new role. The questions that CHROs and HR leaders should ask their business leaders during the interview process to understand their perspectives on culture and people. And why she believes generative AI can amplify the human experience and create more opportunities for diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging in the workplace, and much, much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Jordana. Hey, Jordana, we are excited to have you on the podcast and talk about not only your career, but your unique point of view on talent, the CEO-CHRO relationship, and so much more. But I want to start and talk a little more about your early career. So you started your career at Daimler Chrysler. And over that next 7 years, you had some great experiences, including the opportunity to live in Germany for a year, which is like awesome, especially early in your career to go abroad. But talk to us more about your early career and what career advice you have for early career next gen HR leaders.
Yeah, I took a lot of opportunities early in my career. Some might actually call them risks, but I moved from the Midwest to Alabama to take my first role as a second shift labor relations person in a plant. I later, as you said, moved to Germany. I moved to Detroit. I moved to New York. So I was looking for opportunities that challenged me, stretched me, made me feel like I was adding value, but also innovating at the same time. So I think if I had to say what would be good advice for someone is take those risks if that's something that appeals to you. Take those stretches, because that's usually where you also have the greatest compact experiential learning as well. And so the combo of the risks and the opportunity and the just really heightened experience development during those times is candidly why I am where I am today.
That is incredible. And your first role, you say it was a second shift?
Yeah.
So a second shift labor relations role. When you took that role, because we all start someplace, yes, right? How did you translate that role into future opportunities? Like, what was the game-changing moment for you there to get ahead? Because some people might say, oh gosh, don't take that role. That second shift doesn't sound very glamorous. What are you going to learn? Who are you working for? You know, people could start talking themselves out of these opportunities that maybe were incredible experiences.
Yes. Well, second shift is the place to be when you start, because you're on your own. So you end up having a higher degree of responsibility, accountability, and autonomy early, I would say. So that was a really good opportunity. And game changing for me was starting to make those calls. So when you're second shift labor relations in a plant, in a big automotive plant, yeah, things happen and maybe someone's on call to help you out, but there's that moment where they're not, or they don't pick up the phone and you have to make the call. And it helps you start to develop confidence in your role and confidence in your decision making. And you still can come on to first shift to hang out with the experienced leaders as well. So that's kind of encapsulates that experience.
That's great. I love that you did that and you had to make decisions because there wasn't anybody else there to fall back on. So that's just incredible. And then after Daimler Chrysler, you moved on and decided to join SC Johnson, where you had several big HR leadership roles, really during times of transformation. So talk more about these roles and how it's pivotal for you learning and growing as an HR leader.
Yeah, if I think about my career, the entire sum of it could be put in the word transformation. I entered the workforce in a time when there was a lot of consolidation going on, global consolidation, global organization constructs. And particularly when I was at SC Johnson, we were starting to do manufacturing footprint redesign. We were introducing lean methodology into the manufacturing organization. And later we were reorganizing the North American International divisions into a global division. So that globalization theme. What I learned from all that, besides an incredible need to be very close to how the business operates, what it's trying to achieve, but also the people, process, and technology operation routines currently exist, you have to know that in order to move it to how you want to transform it. So I've learned a lot more, I think, about how the business actually works. So that was incredibly impactful at that point in my career. But secondly, I learned how to put structure to really complex and big tasks. And that has become a really big pivot point for me in my career that time. Because as you take on increasingly more complex and responsible roles, the ability to put structure, big things into small bite-sized pieces and drive it to fruition and execution becomes really important. So that transformative time, it gave me both those things, that closest to the business and that ability through necessity to put structure to really big, massive projects.
Yeah, and that is so important as we move up in our career to be able to actually get to execution, right? All of us in HR, we have to execute and then we have to go plus and do more than that and deliver for stakeholders, deliver business value. But if you don't execute, you're going to be stuck there. So that's really important. And then for SC Johnson, you have been, this is actually your third CHRO role at Corning. Less than a year or so you've been at Corning. So I would consider you a very experienced CHRO. And I'm really interested to know about how you approach onboarding into a new role, especially at the CHRO level. What advice do you have for new CHROs or CHROs who are going into new seats? How do you onboard for success?
Yeah. You know, when I think about these moves, one of the things that you gain from it is the ability to see what are those universal truths and what are those contextual truths in a business, in a role, in how you execute HR or how you strategize around HR. So I've picked that up. And so what I know when I go into any new role is, especially in a CHRO context, you're looking for, first and foremost, what is the mission of the business and how is the business doing against that? And secondly, how is the health of the HR strategy and organization in supporting that mission? Those are two very simple universal truths. Now, how I actually get to that in my onboarding, I meet with a ton of people, right? I'm looking to understand from various viewpoints, the CEOs, the boards, the leadership teams, the HR organization, and even employees that may not even be in HR. I'm looking to understand from their vantage points how they view the mission, the success of the mission of the organization, and HR, and the things HR is doing to support that. And from there, I then take some themes, early themes. I try to do that in the first 90 days. What are the themes I'm seeing? What am I hearing? And what is that making me start to think we should focus on? Either more focus or new focus, shift in focus based on the work HR can do to support the business objectives and the successful realization of those. And I love that process because it's really important to put that down on paper and have it, because that helps you work with your business leaders, CEO, et cetera, your leadership team to align on some of these themes and where you're going to go. And it's also almost like a little time capsule that you can get then later. You revisit it in 6 months, you revisit it a year and say, okay, what did I get right? What did we get wrong? Where do we need to make some more adjustments? So sounds pretty simple and really is. But the complexity is in gathering all that data and putting that into a distilled number of learnings and focusing where to go from there.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And we always talk about these 90-day plans. And to your point, the nuances, and I'm curious how you're doing this, is how are you getting information, finding the universal truths or the contextual truths there, and then building credibility? Because at the same time, everyone's looking at you saying, well, hey, you're the new CHRO. Did we make a good decision? What are you going to bring to the table? Please solve all of our problems now that you're here, Jordana, right? I mean, these are things you're probably hearing from certain people. How do you kind of wade through that? How do you build credibility, but yet get what you need to be successful?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the things that I do in any new role is really work to understand people as people. The people that I'm really going to be working with too, CEO, leadership team, colleagues, but also help people understand me. Because I think, JP, most missteps are really misunderstandings or misperceptions. So the more that in that beginning stage, I can be really honest about who I am and how I think and what I say and what it means and what it doesn't mean. And the more I can ask about what did you mean by that when you said it that way and not assume, is the more we can kind of see when those misunderstandings or misperceptions might be already happening and fix them right away and get to them so that we can be clear. And that's really important, actually. That's not a nice to have. That's super important. It goes back to the question you had, which is when everybody has a different perspective about what you should be solving, it's really helpful then to know how you approach work and how you think and why you may not be looking at something yet or why you might be saying something now versus waiting. I think it's pretty important and a pretty big part of agile onboarding to be doing that back and forth. Who am I and who are you? And how does that inform the way that we are looking at the needs of the organization and the HR work at hand, so to speak?
I think that's really very helpful advice because you're right. A lot of times people, they're trying to learn you and your style and how you communicate what's important to you. So the more you're transparent about that, hopefully the less communication issues you're going to have, right? You're going to work better together. But also knowing something about you, Jordana, that, you know, you don't think of yourself as a CHRO first. You're rather, you think of yourself as a business leader. So that's probably something you talk about as you're kind of being onboarded and getting to know people. Just tell us more about how you feel this way or how do you communicate this to people?
So I think about this because when you really look at these C-suite roles, you're a member of the senior leadership team. You're discussing, you're making decisions. You're shaping where the business is going to go, where the organization is going to go. So that's where your hat is really business leader first. Then you put on your functional hat and say, okay, now how can the function, my specific area of expertise, help meet those needs, rise to that occasion? All C-suite leaders think like that. However, the interesting part is most of the masses, if you will, even within the HR function, they don't think about it that way. They're thinking about you as the head of HR and therefore you should be focused on people topics and maybe get at certain areas of people issues right away. So as you say, I'm pretty honest in onboarding. This is how I think about it. And the first thing we're going to do is really discuss the business and understand what's happening with the business and where we are there. And then we will prioritize and decide which areas and initiatives within HR we really need to address first to bring the value. And there are some things that you just have to do. I call it the watermark things. And then there's places where you have discretionary choice. And that's where obviously the strategizing and the detail come in. But another thing that is sometimes interesting in initial CHRO onboarding is that if the last CHRO or if the concept of CHRO in the executive team's mind is different from that, if it is more functional leaning, if they're part of the masses that see the function first versus the business leader first, that can be new. And again, that goes back to that misperception, know who I am, this is how I approach the work and this is why, versus thinking I might be outside my lane, which sometimes people can say or think or hear, and you have to get at that right away and be able to not be offended by that in any way, shape, or form. You should never be offended in onboarding. Instead, to be able to, okay, let's embrace that discussion. Let me tell you how HR is part of this business process first and why that must be first to inform the right choices of investment in human capital.
Yeah, I think that is so helpful advice. And as you're talking about that, it really makes me think, obviously you're now being onboarded, so now you're telling people this is my philosophy, but that starts even before that, really in the recruitment process, right? As you sit down with the CEO, other senior executive team members, maybe the board members, you're talking about what you believe is important and how you operate. And really, I think in what I've seen in the podcast is that in experience, frankly, CEO and CHRO relationships are so important and so critical to delivering the value we need. And so I'd love to hear more about what you believe a great CEO and CHRO relationship looks like. And specifically, let's talk about what CEOs should expect from CHROs and what CHROs should expect from CEOs.
Yeah. Well, I think all great partnerships are based on aligned purpose, mutual trust, and healthy candor. And I think that's true, CEO, CHRO, and any other relationship you have in your life. But particularly with this relationship, I think it helps if you like each other too, as humans. So those are hallmarks to me. But I think CEOs should expect that CHROs be fully versed in the business and be considering the same vantage point they are, thinking about the same stakeholders they are, board, leadership, employees, customers, communities. And from that vantage point of consideration, the CEO should expect that the CHRO is going to bring through their lens of their expertise on people, so recommendations to achieve the aligned purpose of the org. So the CEO should really be expecting that and holding their CHRO accountable to do that. And I think CHROs should expect and request the all-access pass, which is, I need to be able to have any discussion with you, need to be able to bring any observation, and I need to be involved in those things that I believe are vital for me to be involved in so that I can have the organization HR function support this organization's success. This takes some time. As I said, sometimes CEOs and leadership teams are not raised to think of the CHRO in that context, and or sometimes it's just not the first instinct. Why would the people person be in this meeting? But if you have in the interview process and in the onboarding process and in an ongoing basis, those conversations with your CEO about this is why I need to be part of that decision. And accept the fact that sometimes they might accidentally miss you because of that. Over time, you will get in your rhythm of what you need to be in and what don't need to be in that moment. And over time, when you start to bring that all access pass request and you start to bring the observations, even the ones that are uncomfortable, and you work through that together, it becomes a really beautiful place where it's one of the most powerful unlocks for an organization when the CEO and the CHRO are working in that kind of trust, candor, all access pass discussion type basis.
I love that. I think a lot of people will be now saying all access pass or using that language. But the analogy is interesting, right? Because you're not going back there because you want to get great food and beverages and the VIP treatment. You're going back there because you want to make sure that the show goes off without a hitch, that things are done right, that people are getting the right show notes if we're using this analogy. But it's not easy to ask for the all access pass, right? So I think that takes some guts. And that's where I want to go next was let's talk about how do you interview a CEO? When do you bring up, hey, I want an all access pass? When they're, maybe they're used to giving you front row, but not all the way to get behind backstage. What questions should be asking HR leaders in general or CHROs be asking of CEOs or other business leaders to assess like culture fit and their readiness to have that kind of partnership? Yeah.
In this one, I believe people should ask in the interview process this question indirectly, because I think if you ask it directly, you're going to get the answer you want to hear, but it might not be the true answer. So all CEOs and all leaders will tell you that their HR person is extremely important to them and that people are the most important thing to the organization and they believe in investment, and that's all good. But to me, I think it's more telling when you ask a leader, what's your strategic vision for your organization? What are the major initiatives that are supporting that? How are you approaching this work? And if people and culture and HR doesn't somehow make it into their first pass of that answer, you should ask some more follow-up questions, and it should give you, I wouldn't say pause, but it should make you want to dig deeper to see how they really view the role of people. And that doesn't mean you don't take the job or you don't want the job, but you need to know that, okay, there's going to be a bigger challenge perhaps here in helping the organization really think about that as an integral part of operating routines and success and strategy. And that's how I look at that. I also think that when you're talking to a CEO and you're assessing how they would think about the partnership, it's good to say something like, what does an ideal meeting look like between you and the CHRO? And how often would that be happening in your mind? What are some of the topics you talk about? Again, you're kind of getting at what the vision is in their mind, and that allows you to decide whether that fits with your vision and or how much shaping change management it would take to realize that really excellent cooperative, collaborative relationship.
I love that advice overall. And I love that last question of like, how often should we meet? What questions and what topics do you think would come up? Because you really start to get an insight to what they're going to think about, how they leverage you, what's top of mind for them right away. If they're like, I don't know. You know, then you're like, oh, maybe more transactional than strategic, right? And you're right. It's so hard because as HR leaders, we're excited. We get the call to be our first time CPO. We want it. We want that opportunity. It may or may not be the right leader you're supporting, you know, and it's sometimes hard to assess if they're going to be the right fit. How do I work through that? Because every leader is on a different journey as well, the CEO. So they may or may not understand that. And so this is a challenge I think we see a lot in our field, frankly. Yeah. Let's move on and talk a little more about technology. And I think we frankly almost can't have a conversation today without talking about generative AI. It's so hot. I know it's the hot topic and it's real, right? Mm-hmm. It really is impacting our world. As we move into this new era, I think a lot of HR leaders are saying, hey, let's talk about technology, but you're really saying, let's focus on the human experience. And I'd love to hear more about your perspective on why you believe generative AI and this technology can actually shift and amplify the human experience versus take away from that.
Yeah. So first of all, the most basic level, if you think about how personalized content, entertainment, products have become on the basis of technology and data, and you think about after work, what you go do and how you operate on your phone, and then you think about work and how that's not quite there, right? You can see right there a really unlock that in its very nature makes work more human because it becomes more tailored to you and it becomes more seamless and effortless. And that could be everything from the suggested development content to suggested jobs to suggesting what emails you should answer first to make work easier. And all of that is already out there, just not fully utilized and embraced. But as we look at generative AI and the ability to really create content, report writing, code writing, experimentation in the technical world or the digital AI world, you can also see how that could, if we do it right and we bring people in and we teach them how to bring that into their workflow and how to adjust their workflow to take advantage of that, how that can unlock so much innovation space and imagination space for the human in that equation. And so again, you can see how technology doesn't have to ice us out or make us feel robotic. The opposite, it's taking the robotic actions and it's giving us more time to have this really fully free-forming thing the human mind does best, which is this creativity. At the end of the day, generative AI, it's still learning and making new assumptions off data already in existence, its models in existence. The humans are the ones, and that's why human plus AI is the best equation, right? The humans are the ones. We are the ones who still have the ability to imagine different possibilities, not based off today, but based off fully tomorrow. So it's very exciting to me when I think about how we can bring this in and how HR is really at the nexus of humans and technology. What an amazing function to be in at this moment in time.
Yeah, I love your perspective on this. And I'm glad that you are leaning in to taking that leadership role. And I think it's intimidating. I was recently at the I4CP conference and we kind of put this hand up of like, how many people are actually really leaning into this? And it was probably 20% of the room because a lot of it's still unknown. But I think that's not an excuse for us to not say, hey, how do we get more in front of this? How can we think about shifting the work, the culture, organization? It does have impact to like just supercharge a lot of what we do. I've been really experimenting more with it and really enjoying Claude. And it's like one of my friends, that's an AI designer. He told me to try Claude. He's like, it's almost like a new best friend. And I was like, awesome. My wife thinks I need more friends. So, hey, I'll use this. But it's a brainstorming partner, right? I'll put some things in and you'll ask questions. And you're like, oh, that's good. I haven't thought about that. And this is like early days of what AI is going to be at. So I think you're right. It's going to create more opportunity than less. And I know you're also passionate about the fact that technology can create really more opportunity for diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. And just talk more about your passion around having an equitable workplace and how technology has a role to play here.
Well, I'm extremely passionate because who doesn't believe in equality, right? I hope not many. I hope most of us would say, oh my gosh, this is something that a future we want to realize today. And when you think about technology and its ability to, I'll say, catch you in the moment, to be unbiased, as long as we design it for the right impact and not design it off our current flawed thinking, right? But when you think about that ability in the moment, in the flow of work, to be better, to be sort of caught in that moment, do you really want to make that pay raise? Because that's not equitable with the person you just gave a raise to. How do you want to have a think about this? Here's another suggestion. Hey, you want to select that candidate to go on? You have five others in the slate that actually have more of the profile, potential, competencies aligned to success in the role. Don't you want to look at them? You think about how technology can just unlock that. How your best friend Claude, as you were talking about, could be your work partner and ensure that you were making decisions that led to an equitable future for all. And I just get really excited about that because we know that most of these things are really occurring, these inequities, because of the way that our human mind does think, the biases and the patterns that are built into our thinking. If in a sense with technology, we're able to say, hey, we just want to get in there, rewire that and have you think for us the right way for in the moment until you train us to think better, until you train us to eliminate these biases in our society over time, much time. Wow, that's a real time opportunity in the moment that can affect major change in a much quicker way than we've seen before. One example.
I love that vision. I think you're so right. That data can help us make better decisions and get out of our own bias traps that happen so often. Jordana, last question for you. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
So you gave me this question in advance, JP. I'm going to be honest with the listeners. I thought about this one and thought, how do I encapsulate all this? So I asked AI. One of the platforms said dynamic and tech-driven, and another said adaptive and reimagined. And I say typical, full of change, but still focused on humans.
I love it. I love that you used AI for this. And Jordana, thank you so much for being on the podcast. This was a great conversation. Thank you for the All Access Pass. We appreciate that. And it was really just a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Yo, it was a pleasure speaking with you, JP. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Jordana for sharing her inspiring insights and her advice for HR leaders on how to onboard successfully. We'll be back next week with Hermania Ibarra, who's the Charles Handy Professor of Organizational Behavior at the London Business School. And prior to joining London Business School, she served at INSED and Harvard Business School faculties for over 25 years. Hermania's books and articles are focused and founded on rigorous research and pose some of the most important business questions of our time. How do I reinvent my career? How do I transition to a more senior leadership role? How do we reduce the barriers to women reaching top management roles? And what will leadership look like in the age of AI? Trust me when I say you will not want to miss this episode. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.